No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. We recently moved from Station 2 to Station 1 here at BBS Radio, and we're really excited. So this is our first time on Station 1. I'm the host today as United States Senator Michael D. Brown is attending a funeral for a very dear friend of ours who is experiencing something that no parent should endure, the loss of their child at age of 23. So my prayers and thoughts are with the family, and we hope and we give you the strength that you'll need in the coming days. Again, today, our topic of discussion is education, and we are joined by Lainey Hamson. Lainey is the Executive Director of Class Size Matters, a nonprofit parent advocacy group working for smaller class sizes in New York City and the nation as a whole. She was a public school parent for 15 years, co-founded Parents Across America, and is a board member of the Network for Public Education, a national organization started by Diane Ravitch. She writes for the New York City Public School Parent blog, and Lainey's articles and opinion pieces have been published in Education Week, The New York Times, The New York Daily News, Inside Schools, In These Times, The Washington Post Answer Sheet, Gotham Schools, Gotham Gazette, Huffington Post, The Nation, and elsewhere. A graduate of Harvard University, Lainey worked as a parent advocate at the Educational Priorities Panel and started Class Size Matters in 2000. She regularly speaks before parent advocacy and government groups and has appeared on CNN, MSNBC, CNBC, Fox News, and on national radio shows. In 2007, she received the John Dewey Award from the United Federation of Teachers. In 2009, she was named as one of New York City's family heroes by New York City Family Magazine. And in 2013, she was honored as an extraordinary advocate for our children by Advocates for Justice. During our show, I encourage you all to join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. Hi, Lainey. Thanks for joining the show. It's been a long time since we spoke. I actually worked with you on Class Size Matters, and I'm just so delighted to have you on the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, I'm glad to have you. And just for the audience, I met Lainey when my son was going to school in New York City at PS 116. And he came home one day and told me that he just didn't think it was fair that some of the kids had to take turns taking their test on the floor because the class size was just so large. There was, I think, about close to 38, 40 kids in his class, and they just didn't have, it wasn't big enough. So I remember meeting you, Lainey. I don't know how we first came into play, whether it was through a PTA meeting, but I remember when he told me that, I just said, you know, I told him, you're right. No kids should have to take their test on the floor. So that's how I got involved in your organization. So for the audience, will you explain what Class Size Matters is?
So Class Size Matters is a parent advocacy group. We give information on the benefits of smaller classes to parents and elected officials and school board members throughout the nation, and we advocate for smaller classes in New York City public schools, where we have some of the largest class sizes in the state. And in fact, not that long ago, the state's highest court ruled that New York City kids were denied their constitutional right to an adequate education because of overly large classes. Sadly, things have only gotten worse since the judges made that decision, and now we have the largest class sizes in the early grades in 15 years.
My gosh, because I remember when I left New York City, that was around 2007, you know, we were all excited because they had actually mandated, didn't they, that there had to be, I think, K through six or second, third grade was a certain size and on, and now that's not the case at all. Nobody's taken heart to what the court said?
We're still fighting court cases and fighting in advocacy to try to get those class sizes smaller, but a combination of the Bloomberg administration, which was not interested in reducing class sizes, and ongoing school budget cuts have actually made the situation worse. So
Wow. It's
sad to say that we are nowhere near the goals that we had when we started this organization.
So
and
what would you say
really
would be an average size? I'm sorry. What would you say would be the average, you know, kind of like the average size of a kindergarten? In New York City public schools?
So the contractual limit, the union contractual limit is 25, but more than half of kindergarten classes, there are now more kindergarten classes at 25 or above than there are 20 or less, which was the original goal set by the Bloomberg administration 12 years ago and is what we think the court requires. So the averages are about 20, 24 in K through 3, more like 28, 29 in the other grades. And in many, many schools, we have class sizes of 30 and above.
Well, explain to the audience why class size matters.
So class size matters. Smaller classes are one of the very few education reforms that have been proven to work through rigorous evidence. They improve learning in all the ways that can be measured. They improve student engagement. They lower dropout rates. They lower student disciplinary problems. And they are extremely effective at narrowing the achievement gap, which is the gap in test scores between racial and ethnic groups. So the places where it's most important to have smaller classes is where there are poor kids, immigrant kids, kids of minority groups, and yet those are the places where class sizes tend to be the largest. So we really have an upside-down system in the United States, and it's one of the reasons, not the only reason, but it's one of the reasons why so many of our kids are struggling.
Well, you know, it's interesting. If you were to compare, what do you think, like, the countries that are doing so well in their education, like, say, Japan and Norway, do you have any kind of comparative analysis of what their class size is?
Yes, absolutely. Finland is generally held out as the most successful educational system in the world. It's where not only the students excel on test scores, but are the happiest. And they have smaller classes in all grades. And in fact, their country's educational system turned around in the 1980s when the government went to the teachers' union and said, we want to stop tracking kids in the early grades. And the union came back and said, okay, but only if you reduce class sizes. And so they did that in the elementary schools. And then the government came back and said, okay, we want to stop tracking in the middle grades. And the union said, okay, but only if you reduce class sizes. And then that happened at the high school level, too. So they have class sizes of 20 or less, sometimes even as low as 16 in certain subjects, in all grades, in all schools across the nation. And it's one of the ways in which they've also been able to integrate students with disabilities so well into all the classes, so that nobody really is labeled a special education student, but all kids get the attention that they need.
Wow, that's really impressive, because I know when I used to help in my son's class, it was so large, just, you know, just the controlling of the kids, because you have just so many more distractions, and then the class themselves are not, you know, they're not large enough to have that many kids. Kids are larger than what they used to be when they were younger. And, you know, even having four sitting at a table was really difficult for the kids to actually, you know, concentrate. And so it breaks my heart, because I thought maybe things had gotten so much better. And to hear that you're still struggling with the fight is really sad.
It breaks my heart every day. We also know that many, many schools in New York City, the class sizes violate the building code, which is set up for safety for kids. So it would be difficult for them to get out of the school building in case of a fire or other emergency. It is really unhealthy, it's unsafe, and it's educationally unsound.
Well, let me ask you, you know, I've never been a fan of charter schools. And I know when I, right about the time I was leaving New York, there was just that huge push for charter schools to even be within, you know, regular public schools. And I think that that's now become the norm across the nation. Does that also impact what the class size is as these charter schools come in and you know, take over?
Absolutely. You know, our schools are extremely overcrowded, and one of the reasons they're so overcrowded is because of all the co-locations that have been pushed through, both of charter schools and non-charter schools. So many of our schools are at 100% utilization or more, and what's really unfortunate is often the charter school is allowed to cap enrollment and class size anywhere they like, and yet in the same building, the public school will be bursting at the seams. It's really unfortunate. It creates more inequities and really a separate and unequal atmosphere within the same building.
Well, with a new mayor, and I guess it's Carmen Farina, right, that who is the superintendent? Is that what they would call her position?
Chancellor.
Chancellor, that's right. Do you see with the new mayor a sense of necessity to address these issues?
So we were all very hopeful when Bill de Blasio got elected because he said he would put a moratorium on co-locations and he would charge charter schools rent, which we believe is required by state law. And we actually filed a lawsuit a couple years back, which is still wending its way through the courts, to require that any co-located charter school in a public school building should be required to pay rent. Unfortunately, the chancellor has not lived up to the promises of Bill de Blasio, and though there were more than 40 co-locations that were pushed through in the last months of the Bloomberg administration, and he promised to reconsider every one, and now she's approved 36 of those co-locations going forward. So it's really unfortunate.
So let me ask you, it seems like, are there more charter schools than there are public schools?
No, the charter schools, I think they're fewer than 200 still. We're about to reach the 200 level, and there's something like 1,400 public schools. So they only serve right now about 6% of the students, though with the anticipated growth in enrollment as they fill in more grade levels, that will definitely reach probably 10% before we get to the cap, and it's a very divisive and unpleasant situation in New York. Right now, the charter schools are costing our budget more than $1 billion a year, and pretty much the whole Wall Street business community, tabloids, New York Post, Daily News are behind them, as well as our governor. So they are pushing for the interests of those that small minority of kids over what we think is the interests of the system as a whole.
And, you know, I'm sorry that Michael's not with us because he talks a lot about, you know, New York public schools, they created a lot of, you know, artists and thinkers and, you know, great leaders from the public school. And it just seems to me that it's sad to see this happening because I don't think people understand that the charter schools really, they take funds from the public school. And a lot of people say to me, oh, well, charter schools are great because they're, you know, they're kind of focusing on a certain student, or they believe that it's the student who needs maybe more help, or the student who really wouldn't probably be able to function in the public school for whether it's, you know, they're behind or maybe they don't have the social skills. You know, what would you answer to those people who think charter schools is a great idea?
So I think that often the charter school, quote-unquote, solution is a diversion of what we really need to focus on, which is equitable funding and sufficient programs in all public schools. And right now, our public schools the budgets are being cut to the bone, class sizes are increasing. And instead of focusing on what really is the first top priority of most public school parents, which is a good neighborhood public school that their kids can attend close to home, all the emphasis has been on privatizing the system and allowing corporations to privatize public space and take over public schools. And I think in the end, that's going to be devastating to our system as a whole because public education is really the bedrock basis of our democracy, and we should not be allowing basically corporations to take over and run our public schools.
Well, that's a good lead into my next question. You know, my older son's now in college, and my younger one is going to a Catholic school, and it's a very small school. His whole freshman class is about, I think, 50 kids. So, you know, he's going to class size of about from 8 to 12 kids, and it's really interesting to see, for me, to see the difference between, you know, my older and my younger son. But I started to hear a lot, and I still, you know, belong to a lot of the blogs or, you know, the different lists on education in New York because I like to keep up with what's going on. And I've been seeing a lot of the issue with Common Core. And we had a guest, I guess it was about a month ago, Dr. Miller, who was talking about the Common Core. I had no idea that Bill Gates was kind of a real supporter of this and had been involved in it and also has helped funded it. I think that is what I'm saying is correct. But, you know, I've seen that Common Core has been a big issue in New York City. Can you kind of, this curriculum came into being when? Has it been in place for 2 years?
In New York or across the country?
In New York.
So the Common Core, I think, was developed in the last few years by a couple guys who were hired by the Gates Foundation to design it. And then in the last year in New York State, they've been pushing through the standards and the curriculum and new exams, which have been very controversial. So the Commissioner of Education put all these new curriculums online that teachers have found very faulty, developmentally inappropriate. Some of the questions that they're starting to ask kindergartners and first graders, I would have trouble answering. And they're completely inadequate and inappropriate for kids with special needs. And the commissioner assigned Pearson to develop new Common Core aligned tests. And he decided that he would set the cut scores so that two-thirds or more of the entire state would flunk these tests. So that created a lot of controversy among parents because many parts of the state, they actually have very good public schools where more than 90% of the kids graduate from high school, go on to four-year colleges, and do very well. And yet they told the parents in those communities that their kids were flunking and would not be college and career ready. And so the parents have been pushing back very hard against the flawed curriculum and the tests, as have the teachers. And it's created the biggest uprising against the educational establishment probably in the history of the state. So the commissioner called for some hearings that were organized by the state PTA, and then there was so much parent outrage and protest at the hearings that he canceled them and said that parents were being controlled by private interests and that he was forced to reschedule them. And they're literally every week there's some meeting across the state where parents are screaming and yelling and outraged at the way their schools are being, they feel their schools are being driven into the ground with scripted curriculums, inappropriate reading, and their kids are really stressed out, and they can't even do the homework that their kids are being assigned. So it's pretty much a disaster, and the legislature has responded with various bills to either delay the results of these tests and the new teacher evaluation system or to call off the entire Common Core and rebuild it from scratch.
So you mean, so like say if I'm have a kid who's going to be in kindergarten, do they have them take a test at that age, or is it something that
what happened was because of the new teacher evaluation system, some they have assigned local assessments as well as state tests, and in some districts those local assessments start as young as kindergarten. And so kindergarten students have been assigned tests that are really inappropriate for those ages. Part of what the pushback has been, and some of the bills now say no standardized testing for grades K through 2. But in the other grades, third graders are sitting for standardized state tests for as long as 3 or 4 hours that have very difficult and ambiguous reading passages and questions. Last year, they were full of product placements. Kids were so stressed out that they were fainting and vomiting and freaking out. And so now there's a very large opt-out movement across the state where parents are planning to opt their kids out of tests, and they're facing resistance from their schools and districts on that as well. So it's really a mess. It's a huge mess. And I think what New York State is experiencing now is going to be experienced in the future in many of the states that have adopted the Common Core. And the Common Core is now so controversial across the country that many states are renaming them, rebranding them. I think it's happening even in Arizona. They're being called the Arizona State Standards to try to fool parents, to make them think that they aren't the same.
That's crazy, because you mean, so in some of these tests, they actually, I want them to identify with products or see if they know certain products? Is that
well,
what you mean?
Who knows why, but they had logos that, like Lego and different brand names for video games were included in the test.
Oh my gosh.
There's never been a proper explanation of by Pearson of why these logos were included, but there's a lot of suspicion that there, you know, may be money connections or something that drove
definitely.
Them to do that. It'll be interesting to see what the tests look like this year. But at the same time, there's these national testing consortia that are developing national tests aligned with the Common Core, and many states have signed up for these national tests that are supposed to be field testing this spring and then start with the real testing next year and in the future, that are going to be given on computers, going to require billions of dollars in terms of equipment and wiring to take the tests on computers, and are very controversial. And they put up some sample questions recently on the PARC site, which is the consortium that I know that New York belongs to, and I think maybe Arizona as well. And I can tell you that I could not answer the high school questions. They were so difficult.
Oh my gosh.
You know, and I graduated from a good college with honors.
Yes.
And I could not answer the high school questions on this test. It was so difficult.
Well, you know, one of the things that I found out, which I just thought was kind of amazing, was that in the curriculum, teaching how to write or cursive is not part of the curriculum. So that, you know, and I actually, you know, it was interesting because Diego was, you know, when he was in the New York public schools, they really didn't teach cursive. They felt like, or the explanation I received was, well, if they're a good reader, they're going to understand and writing will become easily. But now he's 20 and all he can do is really print. He cannot write, you know, in script. And my other son went to Catholic school when I moved to Arizona, and that was huge in the curriculum. I mean, they even gave penmanship awards, and it was a big deal. And now he writes beautifully, but the older one cannot. He can only print. Now I understand that that's not considered at all in the Common Core. And it may seem very like a very kind of obscure question, but isn't that an issue? I mean, I'm sure they're assuming that kids are always going to be on the computers, but you never know what the future brings. And, you know, everyone should at least know how to write. I mean, what do you think about that?
You know, I have no particular opinion on cursive, but I think that districts and schools should be allowed to have autonomy in a lot of these decisions. And it really bugs me the way they're trying to create these restrictive and sometimes nonsensical national standards that all districts and states will have to align themselves to. The one that really bothers me the most is the Common Core prescription that 50% of all reading assigned in school and out of school, starting in kindergarten through fifth grade, has to be informational text, which means non-fictional, non-literary text.
Oh, my
gosh. And then
gosh.
75% starting in sixth grade through high school. And I don't think that makes any sense to have rigid quotas on assigned reading. Already the experience of many teachers has been that it means that they have to have only excerpts from Shakespeare or excerpts from novels in order to maintain those strict quotas. I think that's ridiculous. And I think the entire Common Core standards are absurd because they've never been piloted anywhere in the country. They should have been piloted somewhere with a willing district that enthusiastically wanted to implement them. But instead, they were forced on the entire nation all at once. And I think having that kind of standardization of education is wrong, and it will lead to less flexibility and less innovation in the future, because any state that has adopted the Common Core is not allowed to revise them.
Well, and when did this kind of hit the nation? I mean, it's funny, I'm going to thinking of transferring my son to another Catholic school, and I asked them just, you know, because I had just kind of been real, you know, kind of involved with the issue. And I said, well, do you use the Common Core? And she said, yes, most of it. Some of it we don't, but you'd have to talk to the curriculum director. And I thought, you know, I kind of was surprised that a Catholic school was going to be using the Common Core, but I guess they go hand in hand with, you know, the public schools in a sense. But
they don't have to adopt it, and many leading Catholic educators actually wrote a letter against the Common Core.
They did?
That was famously reprinted in the Washington Post recently.
Wow, that's something
so,
else.
Many private schools, most private schools have not adopted them. In fact, private schools are now marketing themselves as not doing the Common Core, not having the overemphasis on standardized testing, which is now, you know, being pushed through the entire country. So both of these things happened, the Common Core and overemphasis on standardized testing and data collection as part of the race to the top. So the federal government held out this promise of millions of dollars in additional funding to states that adopted the Common Core, adopted a teacher evaluation system based on standardized test scores, which has been shown by experts to be completely invalid and unreliable, and also pushing through a lot of data collection and sharing for public school students. And all of these things, I think, are extremely risky and potentially harmful to kids.
So then could I deduct from our conversation that this is kind of being pushed by the corporations being involved in the educational system to possibly what, produce more kind of a tech worker corporate bee or something? Because it doesn't seem to me that it's a curriculum that really creates a platform for creativity and thinking outside of the box and being different and, you know, maybe not following the rules, but just with that belief that we all kind of learned when we were young, that you could do whatever you want if you worked hard and tried really hard at it. It just seems like it's kind of making it so difficult for kids that they just got to work within this box and stay within the box. Would you say that's kind of a correct analysis?
Yeah, I would say that's a correct analysis. It's a very mechanistic, top-down, and rigid approach to education based on test scores and based on a nationalized, unified, standardized system that is potentially putting kids in boxes and telling them to perform in certain ways. There are many experts, including Yang Zhao, who's an expert both on the Asian and the U.S. educational system, who says this is going to cut down on kids' creativity, and there's some evidence that this has already happened. We should not be emulating the Asian countries, which get high test scores and whose students have been proven to find it very difficult to innovate. In fact, our U.S. economy is based on innovation, and that's where we excel. And we should not be emulating the Asian educational systems, which are sort of pegged to standardized tests and to getting the right answers, you know, and not being able to express their individuality.
Exactly. I agree with you. That's such a scary thought for me. And it looks like we're already at the point where we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and talk about some of these other things. One of the things that I found really interesting is what you're talking about, the data collection. So we have a lot more to talk about, and I want to encourage the audience to call with any questions for Lainey at 888-627-6008. And now we're going to take a short break, and we hope you enjoy the song, which I think is perfect for what we're talking about, and it's by Pink Floyd, Another Brick in the Wall.
Repeat after me. An acre is the area of a rectangle whose length is 1 furlong and whose width is 1 cubit.
And we're back. And I'm excited to tell you all that the senator has joined us. Hello, Senator Brown.
Hello, Kathleen. Thanks for letting me on. They probably didn't notice I was gone since you do most of the talking anyway. But I'm back and I'm so excited. I wanted to be here, but I couldn't. You know, we do the show live, so I had a conflict and I wasn't able to be here. But I'm so excited that we have this guest who knows so, you know, you and I have talked about the Common Core, but I'm not a teacher and this isn't my expertise. And so I'm excited that we have somebody on that can explain this to our listeners because I think it's so important.
I think it is too. And I think it's the part of our show, Lainey, is that we want people in the community to understand they got to be involved. You can't sit on your sofa, watch TV. You can't just be involved in, you know, in your living room. You have to get outside and you have to go to PTA meetings. You have to go to your city council meetings. You have to get involved because what is happening needs the attention of everyone. And so let's get back to the issue. And one of the things I wanted to have you explain to the audience is this thing that's happening in New York that you're kind of spearheading the battle against. You're spearheading the battle against the state disclosing personal student information with a corporation called InBloom Inc. and through InBloom with for-profit vendors without parental consent. So tell us what this is about.
So I started finding out stuff about 2 years ago that was very disturbing to me, but that nobody else was really paying attention to. And it was originally a project of the Gates Foundation that they had funded to the tune of $100 million called the Shared Learning Collaborative. And the Shared Learning Collaborative was set up to collect, digest, uniformly format, and then provide the personal student information of millions of students to for-profit vendors to help them develop their software learning products. And New York State was involved, as well as 8 other states that were called partners in this endeavor. And the state of New York State would not only not give us any information about this, but refused to hold hearings, refused to hand over the contract. And so we had to hold a press conference, and finally they gave us the contract. And every time we found out more, we were more and more disturbed because there didn't seem to be any limit to the sort of personal private information that the state was ready to hand over to this corporation without really telling us anything about it. And then in February of last year, the Shared Learning Collaborative did become a separate corporation called InBloom Inc. And we started blogging about it, and I finally got a reporter of a national media operation, Stephanie Simon of Reuters, to write about this. And Diane Ravitch also started blogging or reprinting some of my blogs. And when parents in the 8 other states found out about it, they were outraged, and they started protesting. And to my tremendous appreciation and satisfaction, 8 out of the 9 states have essentially pulled out of this operation or put their data sharing plans on hold. But to my frustration, New York State is still involved. And though legislation passed last year, we haven't gotten it through both the Senate and the Assembly, and we're trying again this year to block it. But the information that New York State and other states were prepared to share with InBloom Inc. included some of the most sensitive information that you could possibly imagine, including student names, addresses, emails, phone numbers, test scores, grades, disciplinary records, disability information, health information, racial and economic status, many, many data elements that are related to their health conditions, which if they were in their healthcare files, the exact same information, it would be illegal to share it with third parties without parental knowledge or consent. So essentially, when the information got out, parents started to rebel, and and pushed their states and districts to pulling out of this project. But the more I found out about student privacy, the more I realized that districts are and states are sharing this information with other corporations, and other vendors have gotten their hands on this. And there's really no federal protections, because the federal law that's called FERPA that was supposed to protect this information has basically been undermined and eviscerated by the U.S. Department of Education to encourage this kind of data sharing for the purposes of allowing vendors to get a hold of this information and to create their products around it. And the ultimate vision of all these foundations, including the Gates Foundation and the U.S. Department of Education and the testing companies, is to sort of give over our educational system and outsource instruction into private hands, so that they will be put on computers with data mining software programs, and that's called euphemistically a personalized learning.
Oh my gosh.
You know, I just have such a hard time with this, understanding how this can happen, because, you know, I just came from a new doctor and I had to fill out all sorts of forms about their confidentiality and what they could, I had to sign a release for them to give out any of my personal medical information. So how can that be for me, but they can get away with doing this for kids?
So the horrible part of this, and the part that most parents were not aware of at all, is that if there's any medical information about your child in their educational records, it's no longer controlled by HIPAA, which are the medical privacy laws,
right,
but are instead controlled by FERPA, which has basically been eviscerated.
Wow.
So if your child has a medical condition that is in your child's educational records, whether anything from an allergy to epilepsy, and they have to get medication in school or whatever, or any kind of disability that they have to get special services for, that information is not protected by any law. So can be handed over by states and districts without parental knowledge or consent to anyone that they consider their authorized representative or they're a vendor for quote-unquote instructional purposes.
Wow. Well, we do have a caller on. Dr. Miller, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Dr. Miller. Do you have a question
for
Rainey?
Hey, Dr. Miller. Good to see you. Curious.
Well, hi to both of you. Now, I was just listening to Lainey, and I love what she has done, and I've followed her for a while, and I just wanted to know that thanks to her taking the action that she started, it has done so much good, and more people obviously need to be aware and be into taking action so that things like In Bloom could be halted. I know her work is in class size matters. It's just nice hearing you and being able to say something to you. I'm kind of like euphoric at the moment.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Miller. Can I ask you what state you're in?
I'm in California, Los Angeles.
Oh, great. Well, I appreciate that. I think that, the corporate industrial educational complex is threatening to take over the public education system in this country. And unfortunately, the Democrats and the Republicans mainstream are aligned in that effort with the corporations and the large foundations. And parents really have to fight back, because otherwise, our kids' safety and privacy is really at risk.
Well, as a politician, Lainey, I've been in politics a long time, and it's always bothered me that politicians always talk the talk about education, but they never walk the walk. You know, we always talk about how children are the future and how important they are and how important education is. Of course, budgets, the first thing we cut is education. And then, as you mentioned during the break, we cut out anything we see as superfluous, art, music, athletics. In the District of Columbia, we're about to get rid of all the athletic scholarship at the local university, UD. So what can parents do besides writing a letter to the congressman, what can they do to help you not only get your message across, but some effective?
So we're forming a national coalition for student privacy, and if you're interested, you should go on my website and sign up for our newsletter. I'm also on the board of a national group now called Network for Public Education. We just held our first conference in Austin, Texas last weekend, which was a terrific success. And we're really fighting for the preservation and strengthening of the public school system. And we want to elect candidates who believe in that, who will fight for our public schools rather than the interests of corporations. And you can join as a member for the Public Education Network for Public Education, which is online.
Give us that website, and we will post it as well. But can you tell our listeners what that is, how they get on?
Networkforpubliceducation.org.
Okay.
And my Class Size Matters website is classsizematters.org.
I don't know, Dr. Miller, are you still on with us?
Yeah, Lainey.
I know that Dr. Miller also has a show just on education, correct, Dr. Miller? And maybe you can talk to Lainey because she is such a wealth of information on so many issues. And I think with as many shows, radio shows that reach all the different, you know, populations that we reach, that we really got to start this movement going, because I really fear, because I think what you said before, Lainey, is that why we're such a great country is because we had all this individuality and creativity in it. As you said during break, really, that now the schools are moving to cut libraries and art and music and PE and anything that is not kind of like a computerized class or geared to that way, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think our schools are getting this huge double whammy. So with the recession, schools across the country had their budgets slashed to the bone. Class sizes went up dramatically. And at the same time, there's this corporate reform agenda, which is basically overemphasizing standardized tests to the exclusion of everything else, particularly in English and math, and rating our schools and closing them down if they don't perform on the standardized tests, and rating teachers based on their students' performance on the standardized tests, and to the extent possible, privatizing, expanding charter schools, and handing over, our education system to corporations, whether they be running charter schools or running software companies, testing companies, curriculum companies, all of which do not necessarily have the benefit of our students firsthand in their minds, and none of which are really under the control of any democratically governed system. So the more you put education in the hands of private corporations, the more you're taking away your own power and influence as a voter to be able to have an impact and to be able to preserve the public education system. And there are too many private interests who have their hand in the public's pocketbook at this point, and have their own particular ideological bent, which has really nothing to do with improving education.
Well, I just find this amazing, and as a parent that's put three kids through the public school system, Kathleen, I've talked about this in the past, that I've always had a gut feeling that this kind of stuff was going on. But like you say, I'm not an educator, so it's not something I have any expertise in. But I've certainly seen it with my own children, seen that it seems to me that at the upper levels in the District of Columbia school system, at what they call corporate offices, strangely enough, these guys act like they're building widgets. They don't act like they're educating children. They want to produce X amount of units for the lowest possible cost, and that's always bothered me. And I'm not sure politicians have been co-opted by these guys. I certainly see the effect that they have.
Right, and it gets back to the Common Core, too, because many, many of the testing companies were involved in developing the Common Core, and believe it or not, only one classroom teacher. So teachers and parents have been really excluded from the discussion and the ability to influence policy across the country. And these are the two most important stakeholder groups that need to be included.
Well, you know, in the district, again, the only school system I really know about, we're failing miserably. We have almost as many public school children in charter schools as we do in public school, in regular public schools. I think more than 40% of our kids go to charter schools because the district public schools are failing so miserably.
Mm-hmm. It's really kind of a scary thing. And I guess, you know, one thing that we have to convince, and it's the hard thing to do because people have become so lazy about everything, is that they have to take the time to go to these PTA meetings and the hearings that you talk about, you know, that you guys have had in New York. I don't know that there's that kind of thing that really goes on in Arizona, because I don't think that there's really any organization or in Arizona that's saying, hey, what are you doing? We'd like to know what this is all about. And we want to have a town hall meeting.
Can I put in a plug for my friend Robin Hiller's organizations, which is called Voices for Education, headquartered in Tucson. And it's a really great organization that is fighting for smaller classes and to strengthen public schools.
Give me that name. It was Voices on what?
Voices for Education.
Wow. Now, see, yeah. And it's interesting because I guess there's just so many ways that you get information these days that it's hard to find out. I've been listening. I listen to the news and stuff like that here in Arizona, and I haven't really come across her. So I will look into that. Maybe we can have her come on and talk about what she knows is going on in Arizona, because Arizona is such a bizarre place in many ways. But so what do you see is the other issues too that are coming? I mean, are you involved in anything else that is kind of something that we should know about?
Wow. It seems like there are a whole lot of things, but my mind is blank. I mean, the things that we are fighting for consistently are more funding for schools, equitable funding for schools, smaller class sizes, and student privacy. But the whole testing thing is really taken over because of the overemphasis on testing. So there's now going to be a national opt-out movement that parents should get involved in as well. And if you're interested in Arizona, Voices for Education is one of the groups that is leading the effort in Arizona on opting out of tests. And there's some states in which you actually have the legal right to do it, and others where you don't necessarily have the legal right, but you can push to pull your kids out on that day. More and more, we believe that the parents have to take the issue into their own hands. And if they object to the way their kids' data is being shared, or they object to the way that our school system is becoming mechanized and standardized and overemphasized on rote learning, I really encourage you to look into opting your child out of the testing this spring.
Well, let me also tell you, I guess, is it Janet Hirsch, am I saying her name right, that's had that organization, High Stakes Testing? Is she still doing that, you know, where you could get more information about how to opt out of tests?
So we have a couple of organizations now in New York City and across the state. One is the one that I think you were referring is Time Out from Testing.
Time Out from Testing, yes.
Yeah, but there's another organization called Change the Stakes, a relatively new organization that's very active on this issue. And we have a statewide coalition called New York State Allies for Public Education, or NYSAPE. And right now we have a big campaign going on testing as well across the state. But nationally there's an organization called Opt Out, a national Opt Out. And I think in Arizona, one of the organizations that is leading the effort is Voices for Education. So every single state has their own organization that is sort of locally running an effort there.
Well, great. You know, I'm sorry, Mike. I'll give you the last couple of seconds to talk, because I know how it kills you that I'm speaking and I spoke for 30 minutes. We have about like maybe 80 seconds left, but I wanted to thank you. And so, Michael, do you have something you'd like to say?
I want to thank her too. And I want to say, you know, just from a political perspective, that you're right. Parents have to get involved, because I can see the attraction for standardized testing for politicians, because you can quantify it. And I'm telling you, here in Washington, they are lauding this 2% increase in math scores and reading scores. It's all you see in the Washington Post these days about how great schools are doing, because there's been a 2% increase while 51% of our kids are dropping out of high school. It's just crazy to me that we can't see the forest for the trees. And I think you guys are absolutely right that you have to get parents involved. And thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
The last word, Kathleen.
Well, we'll let Lainey have the last word, too, because I know it's killed you, Senator Brown, that I've been talking all this time. But, Lainey, thank you so much, and we hope you'll come back on, because we just kind of did a little bit of delving into the issue. So we have 10 seconds left. Lainey, do you want to say anything before we go?
I just want to say that, you know, it's incredibly important to save and strengthen our public schools. There's nothing more important in terms of maintaining our democracy, and parents have to fight back. And I think we're gaining awareness across the country that a lot of these policies are damaging, and we have the numbers. We may not have the wealth, but we have the numbers, and we've got to use them to fight back and really preserve our public education system.
Thank you, Lainey. And we're going to be going out now. Thank you to the audience, Dr. Miller, for calling your question. And Lainey, again, thanks. Hope to have you back. Michael, you want to say goodbye?
Thanks, America. Keep on listening. Thank you, Lainey. This has been a really important show, and we appreciate it.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.